The Gambling Files Podcast, the podcast with zero fucks to give. Hello and welcome to the Gambling Files Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, John Bruford. I'm joined by the other host, Fintan Costello. Fintan, hello.
Hello, John.
It's been a big day today for the strong game of rugby. I appreciate that's pretty niche, even for me, as references go. It's the day today. It was on Radio 4 back in the day. In fact, that line was said by Alan Partridge, who obviously went on to much bigger things. But anyway, Fintan.
John.
We're here for the podcast. There's a couple of things I'd like to talk about.
Okay. Not like you. Usually pretty quiet and shy and reserved and keep things
reserved. Well, this episode, this is our second episode this week.
It is.
We've got David Bartram on.
We do, and he's fucking brilliant. He's so smart.
And we're talking about crypto and what happened with FTX and the wider repercussions of that. And it is really, really interesting. I mean, I understood maybe 20% of it, and it was probably the 20%.
But what's
we're talking about Cobra Kai.
What you have to do is you have to go back and listen to previous David episodes. And he's basically called all of this. Like, so every time we bring him in, so his first episode, he started talking about NFTs. All right. And then he was 6 months ahead of the NFT boom. All right. Cause we were talking about the horses. Remember the little horse race game? That kind of stuff. Right. Second one, he's talking about staking and every crypto exchange got their own little coins and this is how they're doing all the money and it's all a bit bullshitty. What do we have now? FTX has blown up. I'm telling you, he is absolutely cutting edge.
That would give people a great reason to visit his website, cryptogamblingnews.com then.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And they're not even sponsors. Speaking of which, I woke up in the middle of the night the other day.
Yeah.
And I was worrying about where I was going to find an iGaming platform, and I couldn't fucking think of anywhere.
If somebody wanted an iGaming platform,
who would
we recommend?
I used to know somebody, I'm sure, but I just can't think.
On the tip of my tongue.
Can't think who it was. That's probably a bit of herpes. So one of the things I did want to talk about today was authenticity. Authenticity is something that we do touch on in the previous episode, which we haven't recorded the intro for yet because we're doing this all out of sequence. This is going to make me sound like a terrible and untrusting person, but I was looking on LinkedIn the other day and I saw somebody who used to be in sales for a Europe-based company that made gaming devices. And they'd put this picture of they said, this is my latest triptych.
What's a triptych?
It's a painting or a graphic, in three parts.
Okay.
So three pictures that sit together to make one larger picture.
Okay.
Very often they're religious.
Okay.
Historically they're generally religious. It might be used as the backdrop in a church to a sort of almost like a
Passion
little shrine
of the Christ or the whatever. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Got it.
I looked at this photo and I thought, you fucking liar. Cause it was a photograph of my bedroom. No, I'm just kidding. it was a photograph that was just so clearly lifted from somewhere, lifted from some listing somewhere. And it's one of those ones, if you see posters or something for sale, they will have a photograph of a settee or something and it's in some immaculate livery. You see one corner of it and they'll have the poster, but the poster's not actually above the thing.
No, it's just photoshopped.
It's all made up. It's movie magic. Is what it is. And it was one of those. And I thought, I'm going to have to do this. So I grabbed the image and I reverse searched it. And I found loads of listings from loads of different people selling it on Etsy and places like that. different sizes. Some are in three pieces, some are in four pieces, some are in one piece. And I thought, either this is a very enterprising person and they've really gone all in on selling this great piece of work, or they're full of shit.
So you bought one, is what you're going to tell me next?
Fenton, I'm basically out of work as we record this.
Okay.
Would I be wasting my money?
I was just wondering how far you're going to take the fuck you of like I bought five of them. And I'm sprawled.
I've signed them and I'm now selling them as my original artworks.
I filed a copyright claim against his channel. I've had him delisted.
No.
It's
a good idea, though.
Talking of authenticity, I saw something. I'm not going to name names.
Who was it?
But there's somebody with something that they were promoting on LinkedIn. I'm not even going to say what they're promoting because it would actually be really obvious as to who it is.
Well, just say who it was then, and then we won't have to.
No, I'm not going to do that. And it was really obvious that they're part of some sort of club where they all comment on each other's LinkedIn posts to spam LinkedIn. So basically, LinkedIn has an algorithm. So the more comments and likes that your post gets, and then the more comments and likes it gets, like say within 20 minutes of posting it, that juices the algorithm and LinkedIn thinks it's popular and it'll give it far more visibility.
Mm.
And so there's like, and I've seen this before with this person a number of times, where there's like 20 or 30 comments from real people. None of them have a clue what's been talked about in the main post, but they're kind of just extracting like a keyword or something or saying something. And it's just completely inauthentic. But, you know, this person got their business, they're promoting themselves, they're promoting their products, their services, all this kind of stuff with obviously fake stuff. And yeah. And what I'm really curious is if I'm the only one who's noticed.
I doubt that you are the only person that's noticed, but I think what we can say is I think the reason that this podcast is in the top 10% of most shared podcasts globally on all of Spotify
in 2022
is that we're just keeping it real.
We are. I've got my baseball hat on backwards. I couldn't be keeping it real.
And I've got, you know, I've got no hair, but I'm not pretending to have hair like some people do.
It's not a wig, John.
But I've seen people in the industry who should just be embracing shaving their heads.
It's a tough one for men, right? Because you do, you know, it's an interesting fact, actually. The people who make the most comments about my hair are typically the ones most insecure about their own. So guys with shaved heads, never even mention it. Dodgy comb overs, first thing they bring up.
I mention it all the time.
Yeah, but it's kind of our shtick, right? It's just them.
I am toying with a comb over, though. I'm going to give myself a fringe by just growing my eyebrows out.
Just brushing them
off. And brushing the fuckers back. But I will just have a fringe. I won't have anything else. It's going to look awesome.
I'll tell you what, I think I could do that with my eyebrows. I think that'll be.
I'm pretty sure I can.
I think
as
I
well.
Could get them to touch. Yeah.
I think by the time I hit 50, which is not very far away, I will almost certainly be able to do that. And I'm excited.
Well, they can also then join forces with the ear hair that's starting to sprout, right? That's the...
Let's not even go there. The hair is just...
That could do the sides. And then before you know it, then the back hair, you comb up the back hair.
Oh, man.
I'll tell you what, John, I'll tell you, we could get you sorted.
We could get me hair. But, you know, I've said this before, but if I'd known how much I would enjoy the feeling of my hairless head on a cool cotton pillowcase.
Is it good, is it?
Oh, it's fabulous. And the other thing as well, you know, those visits to Macau when G2E Asia was right on the cusp of rainy season, you just have these massive downpours. And everybody would look at me like I was mental because I'd just go out and walk in it. Because the feeling of warm tropical rain on your head is indescribably lovely.
Oh, I thought you were going to go with like, I would feel it was starting to rain before everybody else. I'd be
oh no, there's
the
that
cover.
As well.
You get like that 10 second head start.
No, I'd just be out in it. I'd just be loving it. Do you remember? I remember I went for a run once in Macau. This is a really weird run. I don't know. This is odd enough that I've remembered it for obviously many years, because this was quite a long time ago. And I remember I was staying somewhere I'd never stayed before. So it was, is that really posh hotel? I can't remember the name of. It's beautiful as well. Really, really lovely. One of the best hotels I've ever stayed at, actually. Anyway, I go out for a run and I was in an unfamiliar area, but I thought, how hard can it be to find where I am? Turns out it was really hard. So I'm running around and it was like fucking 30 odd degrees by 6:30 a.m. and the humidity was just unbearable. And I'm just, all the liquid is just trying to leave my body at once. And the only other dude that I can see running is, I can only describe this guy as, I think he must have been a Chinese bodybuilder. This guy was massive. He was fucking enormous. Everybody else has got umbrellas. Not because it's raining, but because the sun is so brutal. And I got completely lost. And I was somewhere around by MGM. And I went past this. It was like an overpass, like a motor vehicle thoroughfare. And underneath it, there was this massive group of probably Macanese people. It was just a big group of people doing Tai Chi. But incorporated into their Tai Chi, they each had a tennis ball and a tennis racket. And this is one of the strangest things I've ever seen. It was a large group of people. And while I watched, they very gently threw the ball up into the air in front of them to land behind them. And all of the group simultaneously caught the ball on the tennis racket without it bouncing behind them. It was one of those things. Like, even if I'd recorded this, I'd be accused of it being fake.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
What else could they do?
I know, right? Pretty sure they're in a Marvel film now. Tai Chi and the Ten Rings. But it was freakishly fabulous. I wish I could remember what the hotel was called. It was a really posh one, and they're all around the world. And there's one in Vegas.
Mandarin Oriental.
Yeah, thanks. I knew if it was a posh hotel, you'd know it.
Yeah. Maybe
kind of place where, you know, your top gaming executives, you know, live.
Maybe I stay there in Singapore. It's quite nice.
The one in Macau was absolutely stunning.
Yeah, it's nice family room.
Downplaying it now. Yeah, nice family room. Yeah, it's probably a pull-out bed settee that had its own butler. So we're joined by David Bartram, who's very authentic.
He is.
Founder of CryptoGamblingNews.com. And as Fintan has pointed out, he's pretty much nailed all the crypto stuff that's happened before it's happened, because he's really clever and he knows things.
Yeah.
Do you know, David, he also does... This content has been redacted following legal advice.
I don't know if he wants us talking about that or not, but sure.
Oh, fuck, yeah. Maybe I should edit this bit out. But we both know that I don't go back and edit anything out. Shit. Torn. I just make a quick note of the clock there. Don't worry, David. I'll edit this out. Probably.
But leave this bit in. Do you know David? And then just like bleep it out, and then like this. Maybe redacted. He doesn't want us talking about that. What were they talking about? What did they say?
Do you know, Sarah, that's a good idea. That increases the intrigue.
Yeah,
to reiterate something that we've said before, we are actively searching for new sponsors. We are in conversations with a couple of people, but right now they're just conversations. We are in the top 10% of podcasts. In top 10% of most shared podcasts globally on Spotify, listened to in 33 countries, which is pretty amazing. We're closing in very rapidly on 10,000 lifetime downloads, and I don't think it's lying when we say
we are the gambling industry's number one podcast.
I think we probably are.
Is our estimate / asterisk may not be true, but we think it is based on what we can see.
We don't know why, but yeah, we're just riding that wave.
It's our guests. It's not us, mate. So I think on to our guests.
Oh, yeah. Here's David. Our guest today is none other than David Bartram, founder of CryptoGamblingNews.com. You might remember David from previous episodes where Fintan declared his nickname could be Farters Barters.
I didn't join in with that childishness. That's bullying. We don't bring guests on and insult them. That's horrific.
Yeah, you
know better. You know
prove
better
it.
Than this. You know
prove
better
it.
Than this.
Own that's your it. Shame.
Cheers, guys. Oh, it's great to be back.
David, sorry.
Our mum and dad arguing. It's a bit awkward, lads. Come back if you want.
David, welcome. Thank you for coming back. I guess we just left it just long enough that you'd forgotten what it was like.
Yeah. that's the secret, right?
Just long enough. Yeah.
We should probably try and get sponsorship from like UDV or, you know, one of the major drinks companies, because I think we're probably driving people to drink earlier in the day than ever
UDV.
Before.
UDV? What's UDV?
It's one of the world's largest drinks companies.
Oh, I'm thinking of UVF. I'm like, or the UDF or something. I'm sorry, I'm thinking of like loyalist parliamentary groups in Northern Ireland. I'm like,
Fintan, what? You're betraying your roots there. It's like, it's the Ulster Defence Force, isn't it?
Yeah. Why are we going to get sponsorship from them? That's a bit weird. It's nowhere
really
near marching season. We've got months before that kicks in.
That would be strange. Although my birthday is shares with one of the key marches. My birthday is on the date of the Battle of the Boyne.
What's that? The 12th of July, 4th of July,
12th of July, yeah,
12th of July.
So I mean, there's room for personal sponsorship for any Irish marching gambling companies.
There's not many.
It's probably quite a small pool.
It's very niche. It's very niche.
But, you know, that just makes it more valuable. It makes the real estate more valuable. We can do video. I can burn an advert on my head.
We're definitely going to do that one time. We're going to have to do that.
I think we've established, although I will talk more about my future plans, that I'm very much for sale. but David, you're joining us. This is a conversation. I mean, this is what we would call a Fintan conversation. To talk about what's been going on in cryptocurrency, which let's face it, I mean, it's been all over the news recently, and it's not been good news, and it's stop me if I'm wrong here, but it's a cryptocurrency exchange called FTX.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So can you give us a bit of background on that before Fintan nerds out?
Okay. Well, it's basically been another normal wild month in crypto where everything's collapsed and then somewhat bounced back and everyone's panicking. And this seems to be the usual cycle of things in the world of crypto. So let me give you a quick bit of background on this one. It gets a little bit technical, I warn you, but I'll try and keep it sort of top level for the time being. So FTX was the world's second biggest cryptocurrency exchange by some metrics, second or third, depending exactly how you measure it. It was earlier this year valued at around $32 billion. So it was a big deal. And it was run by one guy, a 30-year-old kid from the US called Sam Bankman-Fried, although he was better known as SBF on social media. So he had founded FTX in 2019, so it's quite a new exchange, only a couple of years old, and it had grown really, really quickly. He'd become a sort of poster boy for crypto. He'd been seen as a bit of a savior. Even just a few months ago, he was being compared to JP Morgan because he bailed out quite a few.
Wasn't there a nickname for it? It wasn't JP, it was... Oh, was it? Oh, there was a really clever crypto pun. Linked to JP
Morgan. One.
I've missed it. Sorry. Rubbish joke.
I think post everything that's happened, there's probably quite a few theories as to what SBF could stand for.
Yeah. I'm sure. Go on.
Well, I'm pretty sure I know what the F stands for, certainly. But some of, you know, what I've seen about, you know, the management practices, the whole Bahamas thing and all of that shit, he sounds like a silly bloody fucker.
Yeah, basically. So he was running this absolutely giant cryptocurrency exchange, doing billions and billions of transactions. And he was basically running it sort of out of his bedroom on a Excel spreadsheet, moving billions here, left, right, and center, no real processes in place. And at the start of November, things began to unravel. FTX's big rival, Binance, the world's biggest cryptocurrency exchange, was sort of somewhat wrapped up in FTX. It owned a chunk of it at one stage, and it also owned a big portion of FTX's own cryptocurrency. FTT, the currency was called. And basically at the start of the month, doubts began to emerge on how much how much value FTX actually held in real money, I guess, in real sort of assets that could be, you know, liquidized and actually used. So this FTT token was also a big sort of part of the assets of a crypto hedge fund trading firm that was closely linked to FTX, also owned by Sam Bankman-Fried. Mm-hmm. So these two things sort of came together. And at the start of the month, Binance essentially announced the head of Binance, Changpeng Zhao, or better known as CZ online, announced he was going to be selling a big chunk of FTX's token. He owned a big chunk of FTX's token, and he announced he was going to be selling it. This sent everyone into a panic. The token's value absolutely crashed, and people started to doubt whether FTX actually held a lot of the assets that they claimed to hold. And what it basically did was kick off a good old-fashioned run on the banks. Everyone who had money in FTX jumped in there and started withdrawing it. And very quickly, they were unable to meet those withdrawals. They'd moved large chunks of money around in such a way that meant they basically didn't have the customers' money. And we're only now, this is obviously a moving story, we're only now getting little glimpses of what's actually gone on in this. And I imagine it will take years to unravel, but there's allegations that FTX had essentially used customer funds to take quite risky bets on other cryptocurrencies. And, you know, at first that worked and they made a lot of money, but the minute everyone demanded to have their money back and you know, actually withdraw money from FTX, the whole house of cards collapsed. And it happened very quickly. Within a couple of days, really, there was one day where Binance announced they were going to bail out FTX and buy it themselves. They pulled out of that deal within 24 hours. And then I think a day or two later, they declared bankruptcy. And that's sort of where we are at the moment. Everyone's still, you know, the inquest is still going on. As I say, it's going to take years. By some estimates, probably 1 million people are owed money by FTX. And at the moment, it's not looking great in terms of them getting their money back. A little bit of money's been sort of recovered from all of this. But a lot of the value is tied up in this token, which has now lost pretty much all of its value. So you know, as I say, it was really a house of cards.
And the kind of the house token, so this FTT coin. So the last time you were on, you were teaching us about staking, and you kind of explained, because you kind of read, oh, I'm going to get 6% interest. And then you kind of explained, well, the mechanics of, you've got to convert it into the house token. So FTX has got their FTT coin. Binance has their BNN coin, I think.
BNB.
BNB, that's it. So they've all got their own little kind of house cryptocurrency that they use to kind of just move money around. And like crypto.com had a whole thing for a while where it was going to like massive cash back on your credit card payments and this kind of thing. So, you know, if it looks like a Ponzi scheme and smells like a Ponzi scheme, actually... guess what?
Pretty much. It's money out. it's yeah. money out of thin air, right? I mean, you know, these coins do have some utility, but their utility is quite narrow and within very much within the context of the exchange itself. So often, you know, the way with these coins, FTT, for instance, if you held enough of it, you could sort of pay your trading fees in it, or you'd get discounts in fees for trading. So if, you know, if you're a serious crypto trader, it's worth holding this because, you know, it will save you money in the long run. But the problem is these coins essentially get values that aren't, you know, they have super high values, but they're not very liquid. There's very little trading of them. So exactly. On paper, and this is how FTX and their crypto, their sort of associated crypto trading firm Alameda collapsed, because on paper they were claiming to have assets of like $8 billion in this FTT coin. But in reality, you know, even if someone, you know, just because someone's paid, you know, if I pay a tenner for one of these FTT coins, it doesn't mean you can sell 8 billion of them for a tenner, right? There's just simply not the demand for these coins. They're quite niche products, not really much use beyond that world.
If you buy my shitty NFT for $1 million and then I buy it back off you for $2 million, yeah. Is it really worth $2 million? You know what I mean? Like it is that kind of wash trading, you know, trading exactly. back and forth between yourselves to jack the price. Yeah. So what was fascinating for me with the FTX thing was how many really smart Wall Street kind of firms got dragged into it. So, you know, they had a lot of backing from some big, big names. There's some famous stories coming out now where he's like, he's doing a pitch to Goldman Sachs or something, and he's playing League of Legends at the same time or something like that, right? And the guys are just blown away of like, oh, let's just give them all our money and all this kind of shit. But if we kind of go back to first principles, the whole point of crypto is the blockchain and the public ledger. And, you know, in theory, so there's two parts. So one was, you know, 1 million customers had their money on the exchange. So if it's not your keys, it's not your coins or whatever the phrase is, right? So straight away, like the basic principles of, oh, it's behaving like a bank or a trading platform. So one of the fundamental benefits of crypto wasn't followed by the vast majority of customers, it sounds like. And then the second thing is if everything's meant to be on the blockchain, and clearly it wasn't, or stuff wasn't, you know, things weren't being audited. Like, it's amazing how much due diligence got missed or how much accountability was missed for something that should be fully transparent in theory.
Makes
sense. Like, everyone got greedy and everyone got caught up in the hype that happens. But when we look across the industry, then look at the other exchanges, like who's actually, oh, these guys are an open book and you can see they have the assets, they have this, they have that. Like, is that actually possible with these exchanges?
Well, okay. So the interesting thing here is that the two groups of people sort of laughing at this whole debacle are the people who are just pure anti-crypto and think the whole thing's a scam and want it gone. And, you know, they're saying, we told you so. And the other group of people saying, we told you so, are the super hardcore original crypto guys, the you know, sort of Bitcoin maximalists, as they're known, who are also saying, we told you so, because they're saying that, you know, FTX and Binance and these places aren't really what crypto's about. These are centralized institutions that you're essentially giving your money to one kid in the US who's then gone off and gambled loads of it and lost a few billion and now can't give you your money back. So in a way, it's, you know, you could say this is really damaging for crypto. You could also say it's a perfect example of why we need to go back to the sort of, you know, the core principles that crypto is espousing.
This is the thing, right? Because if you look at the reason there's banking laws, like if you go back to the early days of banking, it was the exact same as what we're seeing today, right?
Yep.
Like just the exact same stuff, or the early days of the stock exchange, exact same stuff. And this is why there's very strong banking and stock exchange regulations and rules, right? To protect consumers and make sure everybody's playing fair. Like, so in a way, it's kind of crypto bros reinventing the finance industry, but actually ending up in the same place. Which is what I don't get in terms of, like, how could they get away with it if everything's meant to be on the blockchain?
Well, okay. I think the main answer to that is that this technology is obviously new. It's what, 13 years old, this technology pretty much. But in terms of a mass of people actually paying attention to it, probably 5 years. Probably 2017 was when the mainstream first actually looked at this and thought, right, what's going on here? So the first point is that just the regulators haven't kept up, and this is the cost of that. The other thing is essentially probably a user experience issue. So we can talk theoretically about the importance of keeping your own private keys. If you don't, if you store your Bitcoin on a centralized exchange, it's not really your Bitcoin. It can, they can do what they want with it. Keep it in your own wallet. That's fine, and that's a good principle. But in terms of a mass market of people willing to do that, does it exist? I'm not sure it does. I mean, an analogy of what essentially holding your own cryptocurrency in your own wallet is like having your logging into your online bank, forgetting your password. So you click, I forgot my password, and they send you a new one, and you go and check your money. With crypto, it's like that button, that I forgot my password button, has gone. And if you forget your password, you never get your money again. Mm. Like, most people don't want that, do they? Like,
that's fair.
I mean, like, we can say, oh yeah, crypto is great because you have full control and full, but you also have full responsibility. And I think most people don't want that, especially for like a decent amount of money. It's quite a lot of pressure. Literally, where do you store this number? You can store it on a physical device. If you lose that physical device, you've lost your money forever. You can write it on a scrap of paper. Again, if you lose it, you lose it. You could tattoo a private key on your arm, but then someone could read it off your arm and steal your money. Like, most people don't actually want to have to be responsible for their own money. So, the user experiences sites like Coinbase and Binance and FTX gave was a way of skipping all that and still getting in on the speculation and the holding Bitcoin and the holding trading the other currencies. But, if you forgot your password, you press a button and they send you another password. So it's really, I think, almost like a user experience thing here. Do people want to take, is there a mass market of people who are, wanting to take full responsibility for their cryptocurrency? I'm not sure there is at the moment.
That's really, I hadn't looked at it like that. I was thinking, I suppose because I'm a bit of a nerd, so for me that was fine. I get it. But I do get your point, that risk. I've definitely lost Bitcoin. Definitely happened.
Right? I think anyone who's been in this space for a while has lost some Bitcoin. Even if it's not I think just forgetting about where some is, right? It's, you have all these wallets and stuff
sitting around.
It's not like you
yeah.
get locked out, but I'm sure there's stuff that I just
but
have forgotten about.
So the way I was thinking more is like there was probably, but there's also like a, obviously if you just pick on Bitcoin, it's like transferring Bitcoin can take a little bit of time, and there's fee that can be, or say Ethereum or something, there can be fees associated with it and stuff like that. So there's actually transaction costs moving from your wallet to an exchange to execute a trade, for example. And I thought that a lot of the reasons they were leaving it on the exchanges was to just cut down on transaction fees.
I think that's probably a factor. I think there's a few factors. I mean, like, for one, it's, these FTX was running huge marketing campaigns with Tom Brady, Larry David, adverts during the Super Bowl. So, like, they're aiming
mass,
at
mass
audience
market,
which simply aren't going to spend the years looking into, how all this works, right? They've heard Bitcoin can make them some money and they want some, and this is by far the easiest way to get some. So I think that's probably a big part of it, like the audience, right? The people that are actually using these sites. I think, I'm sure some savvy crypto guys have made the mistake, it's easy to preach these things, but the actual logistics of doing it often takes more effort, and you think, these guys are big, they're on TV, they'll be fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine. But there was a bunch of, I can't remember, one of the big hedge funds in America, in New York, got caught out with a load of money here.
Yeah.
So, I think what's really interesting with the FTX story is then kind of the ripple effect So there was a company that FTX were bailing out that had to stop. A bunch of their big clients, like hundreds of millions, gone. And I saw a really interesting infographic today where kind of that second order ripple effect of everything that's kind of interlinked with FTX that also has an effect. But then obviously the big thing, the overall kind of macro thing for crypto was just, you know, Bitcoin price and Ethereum price crashed, or all crypto kind of crashed to not all-time lows, but like sub 20. What do we have, like $16,000 now?
Yeah, we've bounced back a little bit the last couple of days. I think we're back over 17,000 for a Bitcoin now.
But that kind of sub 20 is a really interesting threshold from a psychological perspective of how many people are underwater right now in crypto land.
I mean, probably most of FTX, I mean, even if FTX's customers had kept their Bitcoin, most of them probably, you know, assuming they've acquired all their customers since 2019, that's when they were founded, and probably acquired the vast majority when Bitcoin was, you know, up at 40, 50, 60,000, you know, aside from the fact they've lost it anyway, you know, people who've come into the space in those years are most likely down at this point, especially if they got in on some of the wilder NFT plays and the DeFi stuff that, you know, a big chunk of it is just absolutely plummeted to zero. I think, you know, like 16,000-17,000 for Bitcoin, I quite like that price. I mean, I'm not you've always got to be careful on giving the, you know, I try and not give price predictions, but I don't know, you know, who knows, but It seems a decent entry point to me, 16,000-17,000 for Bitcoin, and particularly coming in after a crisis, which obviously very unfortunate for everyone who's lost money. But, you know, crypto wasn't FTX, and there's still, you know, a huge amount of better companies doing stuff, you know, in slightly better ways. I'd even point to Coinbase, which is far from a perfect business, but it's, you know, it's gone about things in a better way than FTX and Binance have, in that, you know, they're more closely regulated in markets. I mean, I'm having a nightmare trying to get any money out of Coinbase at the moment because of the sheer volume of like ID and documents they need to check who you are. But, you know, that is the direction of everything these days, right?
You could argue they're listed on the US stock exchange. That comes with US stock exchange level audits, which is thorough, or definitely more thorough than, I'd say, what some of their competitors are going through. So it would kind of hopefully give you, and I think they did come out with something recently, like they've come out with, this is how much we make, 300 million in assets or something like that. So they've been, and I think that has to be the standard for all of these exchanges, is to just come out and be very, very transparent on assets.
Yeah, I think you need to basically, if you're going to put your crypto somewhere, either find the, you know, the place with the highest level of transparency, or put it somewhere, you know, use a fully decentralized exchange, right? Use an exchange that's literally just, you know, some lines of code and that's it. And, you know, there's no one sat there with your money and, you know, moving it wherever they fancy it and placing bets with you.
So what's an example of a fully decentralized exchange? I haven't heard of this.
Decentralized exchanges, it depends what blockchain they're on. So you could say something like, even like Uniswap is probably the most famous of these on the Ethereum blockchain. So they're not, you know, you're essentially, any transaction you do is done directly on the blockchain, as opposed to, you know, if you trade on FTX, it's really just, they're just moving numbers on a spreadsheet, right? To calculate all of that and process it, and they're just updating your account balance. Nothing's actually really going on in the background on the blockchain at these centralized exchanges. But you go to Uniswap, and, you know, if I sell my, you know, one coin for another on Ethereum, the transaction takes place on the blockchain. You have to pay your fees for that. It might take ages. There's all sorts of downsides to that as well. But it's not, you know, the upside is no one can intervene in that, and you have control of it.
Which seems a bit more crypto, right? It feels like what it should be.
Exactly.
If you're going to go back to the dream of what it's meant to represent, I suppose.
Exactly. This is, I guess, the real crypto world. The other big factor here is the fiat on and off ramp element, right? So the problem with when you get deep into crypto, there's no mechanism for, you know, where's the mechanism for moving that money into pounds or euros or dollars into my bank account? That doesn't exist in a lot of these sort of deep real crypto projects. You need to ultimately, if you want to ever spend that money in fiat, you need to go at some point, a centralized agency you need to go through a centralized agency of some sort to get to turn your crypto into fiat and into your bank account. And, you know, sites like Coinbase, I mean, Coinbase is remarkable. On Coinbase, you can sell your Bitcoin and it's in your bank account within like 5 seconds.
Okay.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's, you know, and that's the trade-off, right? That, you know, most people are happy for the risk that Coinbase goes bankrupt to be able to do that.
And if you go back to your kind of customer experience, like you're not meeting some bloke down an alley with a bag of cash.
Exactly.
To kind of do like a physical, like fiat to crypto exchange. Which does happen. So I suppose what I was thinking about now, because so FTX has blown up and the kind of the ripples for that, I think, are going to play out over the next few months as everything kind of catches up with itself. Who's next? What's the next exchange? So to tether to me seems to be I saw an interest. It was a FTX bought this like tiny bank or something like it, and it looked like a shed
in the US. Yeah,
but that's also used by Tether. There was a link from that bank to Tether, which is like, oh, hang on a minute. So for anybody who's not familiar, Tether is this famous what's called a stable coin. So you don't have the price fluctuation. So it practically trades one for one with the dollar. And in theory, every Tether coin that gets issued is backed by a US dollar. And then there's been a lot of room, and it's kind of become like one of the central currencies propping up a lot of
it's propping up the entire crypto world, because it's basically the vast majority of all crypto trading takes place with Tether. So the whole ecosystem is essentially powered by Tether. If it goes down, we're in real trouble.
What flags it to me is like, so for example, for years, Financial Times did this like whole series on Wirecard. And they were the only newspaper reporting on Wirecard, which was a German payment processor. It was more valuable than most German companies at one point, or like it was more valuable than like Deutsche Bank at one point. But it turns out it was a massive fraud and quite a lot of links to the gambling industry, I think. Dodgy processing in different countries. They've also been doing the same thing with Tether. So their reporting on Tether has been quite like, every time they dig into it, they just come up with more questions of like, this seems really dodgy. This doesn't seem right.
Yeah. Or the big thing at the heart of Tether is as you say, this idea that, you know, the whole principle behind a stablecoin is that you give $1, you get this stablecoin, and at any point you can convert it back. So I can go, I don't want my Tether anymore, and they'll give me $1. So in theory, every dollar needs to be backed, every Tether needs to be backed by a dollar. And they're being quite mysterious and somewhat shady around actually confirming whether that's the case. And they say, it's this thing again, it's the same thing with FTX in a way, because they're talking about assets, it's backed by assets. I think most people using Tether don't want their Tether to be backed by assets. They want it to be backed by a liquid dollar that they can claim in a second. But it's not backed. Essentially, it's not backed by that, and Tether won't share exactly the details publicly, because they say that's their sort of proprietary secret sauce, right? That they can keep this whole thing going because they've got this great little mix of assets and currencies and everything that backs it all up.
And then they've got a tiny auditing firm that you've never heard of. That's like a 3-man band kind of thing. And so, like, when you start kind of listing down all the Ponzi scheme red flags. it does start to kind of stack up as, and I think, I think some of the people involved were ex-Ultimate Bet or something like that, or one of the...
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh,
yeah, there's a poker connection, like a bad poker connection. Not like a good one. It's not like the Scheinbergs are doing it or something. It's like one of the dodgy ones.
The other thing with that is that Tether's been quite linked to the various bull runs that Bitcoin has gone on. So especially the 2017 bull run, there was speculation. And again, I don't think the full story of this has ever quite come out. People have done sort of on-chain analysis to suggest that what Tether was essentially doing was you know, selling these, creating these tethers, getting currencies back for the tethers they were issuing, and then using that money to buy Bitcoin, pushing the price of Bitcoin up. So it's like... It's very deeply sort of root, you know, aside from being the currency of choice for traders, it's also potentially played like a huge role in actually pumping the price of Bitcoin over the last 5 years. And it is, without knowing what it's backed by, without having that, you know, cast iron guarantee that there is a dollar for every one of these tethers issued. Mm. It does make you nervous because a lot of people are starting to look at that, and people, you know, all it is trust, right? At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what actually is going on. It's if people lose trust in it, the whole thing will collapse in a day.
And what's really interesting would like, if you think of the pumping the Bitcoin price, like the more volatile the Bitcoin price is, the more important a stablecoin is as well. So it actually creates a feedback loop. Because one of the issues you need a stablecoin is that because Bitcoin's so volatile, so if I bought Bitcoin at $60,000 and now it's worth $17,000, I can't use that as a method of payment on a regular basis. Like if I'm getting paid 2 Bitcoin as a salary, just the month-to-month volatility is crazy, right? So a stablecoin becomes way more important in that environment. And I think it's ultimately probably one of the key use cases for something. So the Chinese are coming out with the digital renminbi. The US is looking at their, like you could absolutely see central banks issuing their own stable coins effectively.
They're all looking at it at the moment. I mean, and you know, this is a lot of people sort of celebrating, you know, a lot of the crypto doubters celebrating the fall of FTX and sort of trying to claim this is it for crypto now. I think you have to look at the amount stable coins are starting to be used worldwide. The use cases are still there. Crypto's going nowhere. And, you know, even if Tether blew up, you know, I think it would be replaced by something. And there are a few alternatives that are a little bit more reliable, a little bit more transparent on the way they do things. But the use cases are absolutely there. You know, more and more ordinary people. So I'm down in Argentina and inflation's at about 100% here now. It's absolutely out of control. So I went to the bank last week and I had to take a big backpack with me to withdraw money to fit it all in my bag. I wish that was because I was drawing huge amounts of money, but this was like $300 or something I took out, and I filled a big backpack up with notes, just like, you know, things of notes. And it's going up. I'm going to need a wheelbarrow next time. So a lot of people in Argentina, huge numbers of people, are now storing their money in USDT because the peso's out of control. It loses value overnight. The government's put strict capital controls. So I believe ordinary people can only get hold of, I think, $200 per month from official channels.
And so I'm guessing the exchange rate sucks and you're being ripped off. And
exactly. And it's just hard. Yeah, the exchange rate's tough. It's hard to do. So people that, you know, I talk to a lot of people who have no real sort of interest in crypto on, you know, they don't care about the philosophy of it and the ideal of it. They just want somewhere to store money without it losing value. There's cases of that everywhere.
There's and that's the thing. So I totally get it, and I totally get crypto, and I'm a big believer in it. And outside of use cases like that, it's just kind of like, just not yet kind of thing. I think it's time. Like, you know, if you were in Russia, you'd probably be doing the same thing. If you were in Ukraine, you'd probably be doing the same thing. So there's tons of these use cases where being able to bypass the banking system and take control of your money is super, super important. And then there's your classic kind of get rich quick stuff in the meantime, while the world just figures it out and we get to something that's usable. So follow on question then is from the gambling industry as an industry that struggles with payments in lots of different countries has embraced crypto. What impact do you think it's had on the gambling industry? Like the FTX collapse, maybe people looking at stuff with trust with a different lens, and obviously the Bitcoin, like the general price crash as well.
I'm not sure a massive. I'm not sure it's going to have had a massive impact on gambling. I think one trend we're definitely seeing more of now is stablecoin betting is getting far more popular than it was. So previously, Bitcoin gambling was by far the cryptocurrency of choice for people gambling on crypto casinos online. We're now seeing a move to USDT, which is perhaps a sort of a response to concerns over volatility. You know, the fact that, you know, you can win a bet in Bitcoin, but if you don't withdraw your money for a couple of days and the price of Bitcoin has collapsed, you've actually lost money even though you've won your bet. Obviously you can go the other way. But I think that's one factor. The other thing that we've seen, you know, we've seen this from the data on the affiliate side of stuff, that a lower price of Bitcoin actually tends to encourage more activity. People are more willing to gamble with their cryptocurrencies when the price has gone down than they are when it's going up. When Bitcoin's on the rise, people become, you know, they want to hold on to it. They start to believe this is going to go on forever. They don't want to risk their Bitcoin or their other cryptocurrency. After a big collapse, we see actually more activity. Generally, people start being more, you know, more willing to play, actually use these coins. I think I've seen other businesses report this. You know, sites where you can, they're limited, but sites where you can buy stuff in crypto, see more activity when the price is lower. So I don't think there's going to be a massive impact directly. At the same time, we're seeing, you know, we're continuing to see quite a few bigger gaming businesses take little steps into this world. They're cautious ones. They're, you know, and especially for the bigger operators, bigger suppliers with regulation, you know, you can't go all in on this. It's still a gray area. But, you know, we saw, I think earlier this year, Entain announced a big investment in innovation, a new innovation hub, and they sort of centered a lot of that around Web3 stuff. They're talking very positively about Web3 and how that's going to be a, you know, big thing for them going forward. BetConstruct actually just announced, BetConstruct have their own token called, I believe, Fast Token. And they're starting, quite interesting this, they're starting to integrate it a bit more into their sort of B2B ecosystem. So they're letting partners essentially pay them in their own token, which is quite interesting. So I guess essentially partners need to purchase this coin from somewhere, and then they can pay whatever they owe BetConstruct each month in this token.
So what's the benefit for BetConstruct of that?
It's hard to tell. I guess perhaps it solves some payment issues for them. I don't know. I don't want to speak on their behalf.
If you had a lot of clients in sanctioned countries where maybe moving money was a problem, this would be a way to
potentially. It's also that, you know, like a thing, and we see this all over crypto. It's also, there's almost a sort of principle that if you move payments into your own coin, that you hope that it starts something, right? I think, and often it does. It's like, maybe it's the beginning of something. You're not quite sure what, but maybe everyone piles in on this coin and starts investing in it because they think this is going to change the world. We've seen this happen a lot of times.
Sure.
It can just sort of magnify the, you know, even if these payments are not particularly significant, maybe it can just begin something that starts to snowball. And as I say, you know, you see that all over the crypto world over the last few years. Fairly innocuous little integrations that get a few transactions, but then you get the influencers saying this is going to change everything, and investors pile in, and you start to generate value out of nothing. Whether yeah. that is sustainable is another issue.
Got it. And then what about one of my funnest topics is the crypto gambling coins. So what's new in the world of fun token and casino coin and these kind of things?
Not a lot, if I'm honest. That initial round of ICOs in 2017, 2016, 2017, 2018, I think it's fair to say that none of those have really delivered what they said they were going to do. I mean, they all were pledging, you know, we're going to change the face of the gambling industry forever and everyone's going to be gambling in Alcoin, and it didn't happen. What probably the most interesting corner you see now are, so a few people are building metaverse casinos, quite fun.
Really? Are they? Are they really?
Yeah.
we had PKR years ago and nobody gives a shit. Like, is it really fun?
I mean, I don't think anyone's going to use them, realistically.
It's a great proof of concept. It's a nice PR piece.
Yeah.
Maybe you learn some new tech. Yeah. Maybe there's some stuff. But does anyone really give a shit?
No, I mean, you see the number. You see the numbers. You know, even the big metaverse projects. So I think there was a day. So Decentraland, one of the big ones. There was a day, I think, in October where one of the tracking sites reported there were 38 users in Decentraland on a day in October. And this project's valued at, you know, this is a value of more than $1 billion. And it's being, you know, like even the team, if only 38 people are in there on a day, even their own team can't be bothered.
Can't be arsed, right? Yeah.
I mean, it's,
it was like that. It was like that message that Zuckerberg sent out to the Facebook staff of like, start using the Meta stuff. Or whatever. Like, just start using it. Interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, it's fun to look at. It could be cool one day it might be the technology is just not there yet. You look at the how these things look, like graphically they look awful, the user experience is awful. This is all metaverse stuff pretty much. Like I've only dabbled in it, but it just isn't very good, is it?
I've played, and I presume it's pretty much the same thing. I've taken my son a couple of times to this VR arcade in Amsterdam.
Oh, nice.
And it was super fun, right? So it's kind of this little warehouse kind of setup, and you put on your Oculus or whatever it is, and you've got like a machine gun, and you've got your goggles on, but you're not tethered to a computer, right? So you're wireless. And there was two of us in the room, and then we're doing this like zombie shooting game. So we can run around the room, and then if we get close to an actual wall, we'll see an actual wall. So you don't run into the wall. And as a video game experience, it was good fun. So I can kind of see it like as a, and we did a different one in Singapore, but we were tethered to a computer. So it was a slightly different experience. So I could see like as a video game experience, it makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, if you kind of had to force a casino element into it, if you're kind of like sitting in the slot machine, that's really the best way to describe it. Right? So that everything's going on around you. You could probably create a fun experience there. Probably, because you can kind of create this really immersive, say, slots experience. But, you know, it's a lot of hardware. You get a bit sweaty.
Yeah.
You know, it's very intense. I think, you know, to say the technology's got to get, you know, we're currently got the big kind of brick Nokia phones. And I think the technology's got to like jump 20 generations to an iPhone 13 or something to kind of get it to where
I think the thing that's closest to delivering what the metaverse claims it wants to be, I think is Fortnite. I think Fortnite's pretty much a metaverse.
It's Fortnite and it's Roblox.
Yeah. Yeah.
For anyone who's got kids, it's like where they're spending their time and their money. And that's the thing. Yeah. I think it's very much I think if we kind of look just metaverse in general, like it's not going to be about us doing business meetings in Metaverse. It's going to be about the kids playing video, like playing Fortnite, playing Roblox, playing Minecraft. Yep. And because they've already built these little communities where they're all kind of hanging out together and chatting. And like, I found out from my son the other day, like he runs a pub, right? He's built a bar and he runs a bar, and then he's selling stuff from his bar, and then he's using it to the in whatever the server is on to get the tokens to get to buy drugs and hookers. No,
because it adds some actual value. So like I'll jump on Fortnite with a couple of mates back in the UK every so often, and it adds a bit of, you know, there are people that I probably maybe in the past have just called up and had a chat on the phone, right? But you have your chat and you run around and shoot a few people, and it adds a little sort of immersive element. And I think there is some value there, but it needs to be sort of integrated way more into normal life, right? It needs to, the current statements, especially they're empty. It needs to be easy. You need to be able to just jump in and out easy. You can't be putting giant things over your head all the time and going to arcades or whatever you need to do. It needs to be easy to jump in, and it needs to add some value, right? It needs to make the experience of interacting with people better than it would be otherwise. And I think when you see a lot of the products at the moment, it's just simply not. Like, you know, a Metaverse casino, the experience is going to be way worse than just playing on your phone, right, in an online casino.
Yeah.
So where's the value?
Why bother? Yeah, exactly. And I think this is it. Like, I think if you look at any kind of particularly kind of gaming type trends, like, okay, maybe the new PlayStation 5, they're bringing out VR goggles, or it's out. And if you get that plus the killer game, like the must-have, I don't know, the new Grand Theft Auto or the new whatever that's completely built for that, and then the price point's accessible, then all of a sudden, within 18 months, every household's going to have a VR, a really good VR setup. So you could kind of see it, so I think like a couple of things need to line up for this to happen. But I think where Zuckerberg went wrong, like when he immediately it felt like his whole Meta thing was just to distract people from all the scandals, which is just what I feel. They just drown people out with this, and they just won't talk about that anymore. So it's maybe it's 3D fucking chess PR. Maybe not. Maybe he really believes. But then like he's immediately talking about advertising. And you're like, well, nobody's, oh my God, I'll get really great ads. Like, nobody cares about that, right? That's not how this wins. Apart from John. John loves a great ad.
Fucking mad for it.
Mad for it.
But I mean, I like recording them for the podcast.
Yeah, for advertisers. He's got a great ad voice. He can do the voice. It's brilliant. It's really kind of...
Which one do you want?
Deep. Deep and kind of sexy kind of... Go on.
This podcast is so sexy. It'll fuck you up for the rest of your life.
See, my ovaries exploding. Exploding.
I get that a lot.
Yeah.
Just walking down the street, women like, I assume it's their ovaries exploding. I'm just giving them bad wind. Yeah, I think that's...
I agree with you. I think Fortnite and that kind of thing will be the where it happens. And then once the tech is there and super accessible.
I do think that they missed a trick in not making the games in Fortnite 2 weeks long. But then I also think, you know, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, Superdry missed a trick by not making their stuff fucking waterproof. Leaving it there, I've had my say. Please be careful with your branding. If you're making a promise, keep it.
Exactly.
Good advice.
Last question, and then I'll leave you alone. I've heard a lot of people talking about Solana. What is it, and what does it do?
It's a blockchain that's getting a fair bit of traction because it's basically faster and cheaper than alternatives at the moment. That's the short bit of it. So Ethereum's obviously going through changes at the moment, and Ethereum has a vision to become a fast and cheap blockchain, but it's still a fair while off achieving that.
Wasn't the big merge meant to fix that or something, or was that
the big merge was more fix the sort of environmental output of Ethereum. It stopped the need to do outrageous numbers of processes on computers to do a transaction. but the actual fees and the time haven't checked. The fees and the transaction times are still too expensive and too long to do a lot of the things we want to do. So we're seeing, for instance, there's been a few newly launched betting exchanges on blockchains. Mm. And there are betting exchanges on Ethereum. But the problem is they're slow, right? So yeah. I placed a few bets on Ethereum betting exchanges, but you know, you might have a $10 fee to place the bet. And then the bet might take 8 minutes to go through, in which case, you know, who knows what's happened and have you got the price you wanted?
Sure,
it just simply doesn't work. So the next generation of these, I think BetDex is probably the most famous. It's got a couple of the old Betfair guys on there and has attracted a fair bit of investment. I believe they're on Solana because it's fast enough and cheap enough to do these transactions and still have everything on the blockchain. That's the main thing. And you know, a lot of stuff, you know the whole NFT boom, people want to be able to buy and sell these things quickly and cheaply. So you need, you can't be paying, you know, even $5 every time you want to do a transaction. And often a transaction isn't even the whole sale. It might be like $5 to list an NFT for sale.
Oh, okay.
And then maybe more to take it off. And, you know, if it doesn't get sold, if you want to change the price, you need to pay again. So it's just, I mean, there's a whole bunch of blockchains competing to be the fast and quick and cheap solution that everyone builds on. The problem is Ethereum still has by far the biggest developer community. So a lot of the cool stuff still getting built on Ethereum, even though it's potentially not the ideal place, but maybe they solve some of those issues. Solana's an interesting one for the betting industry. As I say, a couple of betting exchanges are using it as their blockchain.
We might have one of them on the podcast next week. I know, I'm very excited. Because I bought some Ethereum before the big merge, thinking I was a genius, and then the price went down 20%, and then I'm like, right, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm never doing this again. Ring David the next time. I think it's the lesson there.
That's why we get the experts on Fintech.
It sure is. Brilliant, David. Thank you for that.
Cheers, guys.
Really good.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Gambling Files podcast, please find us on LinkedIn. Give us a big, juicy, succulent like. That nearly went wrong. You can find us under the name The Gambling Files Podcast. You can find us on Twitter under The Gambling Files. I think the handle is just @GamblingFiles. You can connect to myself, John Bruford, or Fintan Costello, also on LinkedIn. We're also both on Twitter. And you can find all of our previous episodes at www.thegamblingfiles.com. If you enjoyed it, please share. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your colleagues, and we'll see you next time.